you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow X? Ralph Sutton, the SDR Show. This week, Lewis Black, comedian from a lot of things, but mainly you might know him from The Daily Show and as a comic working for many, many years, is on the show. We do this every single Wednesday and Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're a fan of Lewis Black, you could have heard it 5 days ago, commercial-free, as opposed to wherever you're listening or watching now, at gasdigitalnetwork.com. You use the code SDR, you get 20% off and a 7-day free trial. Try it out, watch or listen to every episode we've ever done, every other show on the network. You don't like it, just cancel. Or just listen or watch wherever you are, share the love, let people know about the show. Here it is right now, the Lewis Black episode of The SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone fuck the hoes. It's weed, I'm beat, it's hookers and blow. It's art, it's far, you need to know. The SDR Show. Let's go.
It is the SDR Show, sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. On with me as a co-host, I'm going to say I think for the first time, is second. Mike Cannon. How are you, buddy? Second time. Who was the first guest you co-hosted with me?
Tommy Chong.
Oh, Tommy Chong. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's when I was in Florida. That's right. I remember that now. That was good. Such a cool dude. What a legend to have on. By the way, speaking of legends, great segue right now, right? Let's say this. Comedian, actor, author, currently on tour, the Off the Rails tour. He has the Lewis Black rant cast. I think a 5-decade contributor to The Daily Show, probably got to be some sort of record there in everything from When Harry Met Sally to SpongeBob SquarePants to Anger from Inside Out. It is fucking Lewis Black. How are you, buddy?
Oh, better every day. Just everything is just really falling into place, isn't it?
Well, I'm sure it is. I'm gonna start with this, though. This is a very interesting way to start this. Ready?
Yeah.
I believe I it's a sketchy subject because of her age, but I believe your mother is still alive at 104, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, she's 103. She turns 104 on September 8th.
All right, that's pretty wild. I want to talk about her in a little bit, but I will say that this is interesting. My mother loves you, right? And why that's interesting is, let's see if you know who this is. My mom ran upstairs at Green Street. Her name is Leah Sutton. Do you remember her?
Yes, vaguely. Everything is vague.
Because you used to play there when I was a kid. Yes. I saw you maybe when I was like 12. It was cheaper than a fucking babysitter. So I would go see the comics when my mom was running this club upstairs at Green Street. Because I know the first time you were in New York, it was Mario Cantone, Kevin Meaney, and you at Catch. And my mother managed Mario Cantone for years. I've known Mario since I'm 10. And I told her you were coming on. And she goes, oh, my God, please make sure to tell him I said hi.
Well, send my love.
I definitely will. I will pretend that you remembered her vividly.
But just tell her, you know, it's literally there is, I think, since I ran a room in New York City called the West Bank Cafe. So I met literally about 100 people a week for 8 years. And that completely destroyed most of the cells, trying to maintain any vague memory. And I at least I remember her name, which is pretty amazing. And I remember being up there, and I would have and if she came up to me, I probably wouldn't remember until she told me, and then I would have some vague facial recognition thing.
Mm-hmm. That's funny. Well, I remember this is that back then, so we're talking 35, 40 years ago, maybe it's 40 years ago, right? Almost, right? You used to do, you know, you're synonymous with ranting on topics, but you would rant to the back wall.
Yeah.
And at some point you switched to where you ranted forward.
Yeah.
I don't know where that epiphany came from, but I remember distinctly that you used to like turn to the wall and like yell at the wall. When I was like 12, I remember that.
Yeah. Well, I used to do that because it was, I was afraid to yell directly. I just, it didn't seem to be like something a comic, I'd never seen a comic really do that until I saw Kinison eventually. But at that point, I was yelling directly at them. But there was nobody kind of doing that. And I was, and generally because I had no, I was learning and had no sense of what the fuck I was doing, that I was bellowing, you know, at this audience. And, but I had no, it was real anger a lot of the times, or it was suppressed anger, both of which are never good for comedy. You can get an, you know, a little bit of it, and then you better, you got to put your foot off the gas, or they'll turn on you. So, which I learned along the way. So, but when I started to turn around to the audience, is a comic named Dan Ballard, who worked out of Michigan for years. He was there one night with another friend of mine who opened for me, who opened for me for a number of years, and also was a great comic, John Bowman, and Ballard came up to me after he saw me do a set, and he said, "Look," he said, "I don't know what you think you're doing up there." He said, "But," and this is a big, tall guy, bald, huge, 6'4", massive, and he said, "I'm yelling at the audience, and I'm not, and there's nothing in my act that deserved to be yelled. Nothing. You actually are angry. So you get up there, and from the moment you go until the very end, I want you to yell the whole act." And I just, and I thought, why not? Everything else wasn't working, so I did, and it worked. And that was, it was like a revelation.
That's wild. That's really cool. It's always funny because how many years into it were you when that switch happened?
Well, I really had not committed to becoming a comic. I was just still thinking I was going to be writing plays and working in theater. I'd been fooling around with comedy at that point for 15, 16, 17 years.
Excuse me, because the interesting thing is that you just touched on, you were writing plays for like 22, 23 years. The last one I think you wrote was The Czar of Rock and Roll, that apparently went either so poorly or so let you down that you decided, fuck this, I'm pivoting to stand up. Is that about right?
Yeah, that's
right. And at 40 years old, too.
Yeah, that was at 40. I had a production of it down with my friend Rusty McGee and Rand Forrester, who directed it. We went down to the Alley Theater in Houston, and as I call it, it's like I'd finally gotten to where I thought, you know, okay, I'm playing. It's AAA ball when you do kind of a nice regional theater, and it had been there for years, and I went down to do it, and it was a horrible experience, and it was everything that they did was just madness. I mean, they just kept, everything they told me pretty much was a lie. So me and my
meaning
friend,
like production budgets, or what do you mean by that? Like the size of the room?
Yeah, for starters, that there would be X amount of actors from New York, okay? Because part of the deal was with some of the actors coming down was this, we'll have at least 4 or 6 actors from New York, and we're going to have some, and they had their own company. We're going to combine with them. They had a great company, but they never told us, and it was not part of the deal, that they would use actors from their company that were their students.
Okay.
Right? So the apprentices. And it was like, no. I need as professional a company as possible. And we needed another actor from New York. And we ended up having to, they dropped one of the kids that they were going to use, and we ended up having to, me and Rusty, who wrote the music and the lyrics, and I wrote the book, we had to take money out of our salary to pay this actor.
Really? Well, can I ask if you could give me what do they call that? The pitch line of The Czar of Rock and Roll. What was it about? What was the story?
It was about a fake mockumentary about a real guy. You changed his name, but there was a guy named Dean Reed, I believe is his real name. and he was the Elvis Presley of Russia.
Oh, bizarre, right? Yeah.
He left the United States where he had been kind of like in the around the time of the Everly Brothers and them, and he had like a he had a song that was climbing the charts in Colorado, and he went down to do some concerts in South America, and ended up in a socialist country, and I can't remember which one, and got enamored with the fact that he had an audience for his stuff there, and he was a profoundly, as we could tell, a mediocre singer and talent, and went on to Russia, and then he did cowboy movies in Russia.
Wow! So there's truth to the person, and then you made a mockumentary about this person.
Yeah, my friend Rusty had discovered this guy and said, "I think this might be a great musical," and he wrote. What was great was as Rusty wrote really profoundly mediocre music as hits in the thing. It was and we did it. And it, to give you an idea of like, you know, they always talk about timing in terms of careers. Mm-hmm. And this is a perfect example of it for anybody who's breaking in the business and wonders, well, how come it didn't happen? Here's why, schmuck. So we've got this show that's going... that we wrote, it's like 70 minutes long. It's based on the fact that it's Soviet Russia. That's what it's based on. Well, by the time we get a production, the Berlin Wall's come down. And they want, the theater says they'll do the show if we come up with the second act. Well, the second act is now we got to have the wall come in.
Right,
Well, you know what? That destroys, in part, it undermines what we were doing. And because really we didn't have the time to down there, I was supposed to be able to stay down there and continue to work on it. It basically undermined the show. Because it took the tension out of it. And we kind of came up with some stuff, but it wasn't as good as the original idea. Because he had pretty much died, I think. But he died mysteriously in East Germany in a swimming pool. It was spectacular. And now we've got to do these others. So it's literally, so then all of a sudden we're screwed. But we kept kind of going through it. Also, which makes this story even better, is we're sitting there on opening night. And the cast has finally got this thing. It's a new, it's new. So, you know, when you've got a new show, it's like literally watching the Wright Brothers plane try to fly. It's like, boom, boom. So we finally got the first act moving, and they're moving into the second act. And the two critics, the Houston theater critics, are sitting directly across from Rusty and I on the other side of this theater. And the second act starts. And we know that one of the folks that we had invited who ran a bar, of course, that's who we knew. She ran the bar there. One of the cast had said, you know, maybe you should leave. You look a little sick. Well, she's sitting behind the drama critics. And we're 10 minutes into the second act. And now it looks like we actually are getting, we might be able to pull this off and bullshit our way just so that it looks like we know what we're doing. And because the cast covers a lot for you a lot of times. Well, lo and behold, she starts throwing up 10 minutes into
it. Oh, my God.
Onto the two critics. And you could hear I hate to be graphic, but to give you the sense of it, you could hear the splash. You could hear the blip, blip, you can hear everything. Oh. And we're watching, and you can see people kind of spreading out. And the cast kind of like, what? And the two critics, and I turned to my friend Rusty, and I said, well, there's the story of our career.
Well, that's it. One, I like how vividly you remember this and you don't remember my mother. That says a lot. Number two, when I took, which I felt was worth at least 300 points, when I took the SATs at 17 years old, 18 years old, the woman in front of me vomited onto the desk all over the place. And we were not allowed to break. We had to stay there and take the test while she left, and a janitor came in and mopped up the vomit right in front of me.
No.
And I thought that's worth at least a couple hundred points, for God's sake.
It's worth 300 easy.
Easy.
Easy, and it's worth a scholarship.
Yeah, they wouldn't let us stop. It was ridiculous.
They take your test, they mop up her vomit, and give you a scholarship.
That's what it should have been, for sure, 100%. All right, so you were locked down, I think I read, 10 weeks by yourself, which has got to be fucking nuts, and 600 days overall. Is that right?
No, 600 days before I did my first show.
Oh, okay. So,
I was 600 days, we wouldn't even be talking to me. You'd be, I would be in.
So 600 days in between shows, but there was a period of time of 10 weeks where it was just Lewis Black and his thoughts.
From March 14th, from the moment I got back from my final show, March 14th, and till whatever it was, 10 weeks later, I saw nobody.
That's got to be.
And I lost, and I'm still recovering. And when I hear people talk about how they're doing now, I go, fuck you, you're not. Okay? This country's still fucking half nuts.
Half?
And it's half nuts because of what happened and because people spent 2 years doing shit they weren't doing before and trying to pretend they were going to keep doing it. Fuck you.
There's no more evidence.
Huh?
I said there's no more evidence in that than doing stand-up, going back out and performing in front of people and seeing how they have truly forgotten how to be human beings, even sitting in seats.
Yeah, it's really, isn't it something?
Yeah, I mean, you tried, I read that you tried to just go back full swing immediately and then just got sick because your body wasn't ready for it.
Oh, yeah, I was an idiot. I'm like thinking, your brain is because there's the brain with this whole thing of what happened. It seemed like everything seemed like it was 1 week seemed like a minute or a minute seemed like 5 weeks. Not there was no sense of time. And I'm thinking, I did this. I can go right out there and do. So I go to Hilarity's in Cleveland, which is a great club. And I knocked off a couple of shows that I was going to do before that. And I said, go back to Hilarity's. I'll do six shows in four nights. And they'll be 50 minutes apiece. Okay? So, but of course not. It's not 50. I'm so excited to be on stage. I'm going like 70, 75 minutes the first night I'm there. Then I act like I did after every show. There's a football game on. It's Monday Night Football. Well, glug, glug, drink, drink. Hey, look at this. And I'm yelling through that because it's a great game. And I wake up the next day and I go, oh, boy, I think I drove it over the line. And then 3 days later, I went. I was leaving to go up to, this is something, the National Comedy Center. I don't know if you've heard about this.
I don't know it, no.
Yeah, Jamestown, right?
You know it?
Yeah, I've seen it, yeah.
Yeah, so I was going up there to do some work, and I'm on the bus, and I realize on the bus that I have pneumonia.
Yeah.
But I had literally broke myself.
Jesus.
And so I had to recover. Before I went back, and the doc said, "Well, you know, once you feel better," and I felt better, and I was clear of the pneumonia, and I'm okay. We can go back on the road. It's like 6 weeks later, I get back on the road. I do two more weeks, and I feel sick again. And the doctor goes, "Well, you know, sometimes you have a flare up." Well, why didn't you tell me you could have a fucking flare up? So it took another few weeks out of it, but eventually I've been able to do it. Now, at least going back, I've kind of been off now, which truly pissed me off having to stop. Because finally I'm rolling, and it was like, but you had so many comics going out who were going back filling, you know, who pushed their times and everything that I couldn't really get back out until, but I'm ready to go. I mean, I feel much better about things.
Did you get through the entire pandemic sans COVID, or it was just pneumonia, or you got COVID at one point also?
No, I was there was just no chance. If I could have worn a hazmat suit, I would have worn one. I had no problem with any of that. Oh, you know, it's just that. No, it's not, you fucking asshole. If you've got an underlying condition, you idiots.
Did you? I hate that it always tends to go back to this, especially on Zoom calls, but. Here in New York, I know you're an avid, you're a staunch New Yorker, but I read that you also live in North Carolina. Is that right, or am I wrong there?
No, I used to live there. I mean, I would had a place there, and I've started all of my books there, and I lived there part time, and had a small apartment there, and then I was lucky to have it, and then I because of the pandemic, I haven't been back, so.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest coaches' leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
So you're in New York now?
Yeah.
Okay, because in the New York, again, I'm not a comic. Mike is a comic, but there were some comics that were anti-COVID, anti-vax, that it was just an interesting dynamic to see in your world with the comics that you hang out with or spend time with. Was there any of that, or were you all on the same page?
We were all on the same page. There was all, you know, as a matter of fact, the first, one of the first persons I saw was Kathleen Madigan, mm-hmm. who's a good friend. And she had been hiding out, so I could actually, she had been hiding out, and some friends of ours down there had been hiding out. And so I was, that was the first place I was able to get to where it was like, oh, we're all on, and before the vaccine and everything. So I went to places when they started this concept of pods, which is always a creepy word.
There was a lot of those. And also my regular co-host, Big J Okerson, he did one of those, I think, which was weird. Those comedy shows where everybody was in cars and they would honk instead of applaud.
I did that too.
That was fucking weird as shit. It just seemed like such a dumb idea, Mike.
There's no more condomed experience in terms of comedy than delivering to non-laughs but blinking of lights and beeping of horns as a, you know, as some sort of adequate alternative. It's
brutal. It just sounds so awful. I don't know why. I mean, I guess we were so starved for entertainment, you try and do anything, but God damn it.
Did you do that, Mike? Did you do one of those?
I did. Yeah, I did during the pandemic. So I did two of those because I quickly realized that it just wasn't worth my my self-esteem. But then I did a bunch of park shows with no microphone, which is basically homeless community theater. And then I was doing like rooftop shows, which those were a little bit better set up. And some of those even continue to exist because they were really good. And then they had some other kind of makeshift parking lot stuff as well. But, you know, we in New York, everybody was so starved for stage time. Everybody needed it. It was great.
Oh, good. I just couldn't do it, also that being outside drives me nuts, you know.
Also you're a victim of the elements too, which is weird.
Yeah, I mean, it's just crazy, you know. It's like listen to the car honk, listen to the siren, you know, then you gotta sirens. Play the, then you're playing the universe, okay?
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
It becomes like, what, this? I did a gig in one of the Great Adventures, whatever the fuck, amusement parks in Jersey, and they had a tent there. And I mean, but this is where you learn shit. So I'm in the tent, and every 65, 70 seconds, there's a roller coaster just nearby, and it's coming down. So every 75 seconds, you hear, whoa! And so now I'm kind of, now you get the timing of it.
Right.
So now I'm working that into everything. It's like,
you should have done like the Dice Clay line. If you timed it with Dice Clay, you're like, oh, she needed the money. Whoa! So, by the way, you won two Grammys. You were nominated for a third. I don't know when they announced or did they announce when the, I don't even know when the Grammys are, but the one, it's called Thank You, Thanks for Risking Your Life comedy special that was filmed right before lockdown or like while we were kind of locking down. I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah, it was filmed, yeah, right before, but literally it was March. We filmed it March 12th or 13th. And and so March 15th was the lockdown began. And it was the night, it was 13th. It was the night before most shows just stopped.
Wow. And your opening line was that, right? That was your opening line, Thanks for Risking Your Life, which just because it was an organic line of the moment, right?
Yeah, it was, because I'd already been told, you know, they were thinking of canceling that night, but they had a full house. And now they're all sitting in there together, and it was like I saw the future, and it didn't look good. I mean, that was really, and And that was the first, you know, that was the first time you had an inkling of what was coming. I mean, right. I'd already studied this thing. I literally, as I said in the next special that I just did, that it was like Kathleen Madigan and I were the Fauci and Burks of the comedy community. That's all we studied. It's where is it? What's coming on? Because the feds weren't dealing with it, and I went. We are fucked. We are so fucked.
Yeah,
and nobody was, and then it so went, by the time it hit, it was like okay, and I got out of there, and we were very. I mean, I was lucky we were able to do that special that night because it was totally based on the fact that we had got two more cameras in the room, which we were keeping it just for the sake of history because it would be one of the last shows, and it was really. I was hoping to shoot the thing in like July, and now it's March, and I finished up in Jeff Stilson, who opens for me. I came backstage and he went, you know, that's the special, and it was kind of like watching the dress rehearsal.
That's cool. That's wild.
That's awesome.
When do you find out if you win a Grammy or not? I don't know when the Grammys are. I know they were
back a while ago, whenever the fuck that was.
I don't pay attention to that shit at
nobody
all.
Nobody does.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like winning a, you know, you won the log splitter award.
I think, by the way, that we are probably 5 years away from any sense of normalcy. Do you agree with that or you disagree?
I think I'm hoping it's three. But I think five is probably closer to what it is. But
yeah, I think that's definitely
going to be my own sanity. I'm hoping it's three.
Do you think human behavior can come back? Like, are we just currently experiencing a brain swell of consciousness, and then it kind of needs to reconfigure itself?
I think it reconfigures. I think once people kind of are able to be in a public square together long enough, and they relearn that you know, it's a lot easier to yell at a screen.
Right. Do you notice a lot more hecklers now than ever before? Is that one of the things that's like a byproduct of the lockdown? Is that a thing
because
or no?
I haven't, not so much because I started my act when I hit the road. The first 2 minutes was you don't get to pull this shit anymore. Ball game's over. Okay, we went through this before lockdown. You don't do it anymore. People paid real money to see the show, okay? Right. So allow them to see the show.
Right. Well, and you have the benefit of being an intelligent comedian that has an audience that reads. Like when I go out, I'm performing for my people who don't, and then the general populace who do even less.
I can understand that because it got, but it got ugly when the former leader was, was kind of at the height. You know, people would show up and it was like, what? How come you're not talking about Obama? Well, he's not the president, putz. Jesus, what's the matter with you? They reacted. I'd never seen that kind of reaction, really. I didn't have a lot of heckling until he won. And then all of a sudden, these people who'd been my fans, a chunk of them, because why? Because they were anti-authority. It's pretty simple. Mm-hmm. Now, all of a sudden, they found somebody they liked. Well, goody fuck for you. Okay? I haven't liked any of them, you fucking idiots.
That's funny. I would say my philosophy always is anyone that wants to be president probably shouldn't be president in your life. I mean, you've been now a political commentator on The Daily Show or a commentator at some degree or another for 5 decades. Is there any president in your life and you look back and you say, oh, I did kind of like that one?
I mean, I like you like Kennedy because, you slept with Marilyn Monroe. What's not to like?
I guess that's good. That's true.
You know?
That's
and also, the other reason you like Kennedy is A,
he was white.
Actually took, huh?
I said he was white. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. And privileged. But he also, he did something that a few others really are great at. When he was he fucking knew how to be in public. He was great. He had charisma. And a lot of that is not, well, you have to have it. No, you don't. Part of it's learned, putz. I'm basically introverted, you fucking morons. And so I had to learn this shit.
But I wonder, though. I'm going to play devil's advocate because I don't remember Kennedy. I wasn't alive. I'm 52. I wasn't alive at that time. But I wonder if you look back on it romantically now, And B, he did get shot. So you make think you look at him in a little bit, just like I believe Kurt Cobain, I believe Nirvana would not have been as big of a band if he wasn't shot. Like that second album wasn't selling that well. And then he died and he became a folk hero. So I wonder if there's some romance involved in that and in the hindsight, you know?
No, because the reason there's no romance in it is because it was the first of the traumatic incidents. So it was a trauma. You're sitting in high school and they come on with the factory. I was 12 or 13, you know, and you know that the president's been shot. And you kind of like, what? There's a weirdness to it that it. I think what you're right about is that the romanticism is the fact that since he didn't run the term, he didn't finish out, you would have kind of discovered things along, right. You know, the holes would have appeared. But what he did do, which was really the most important thing I thought that he did, even though I have no interest in science, he went, we're going to go to the moon and we're going to do it in this amount of time.
Right.
And we did it.
Right. That is true.
We did do that. Set it in motion and we fucking did it.
And it segues perfectly. We're doing it again in a few days, which is pretty wild. We're going back to the moon.
And I think, and that's one of the reasons I think, just out of, my own delusion that this may not have an effect on us, but I think it'll help us. But I think for kids, I think for young kids who have been completely fucked over the past few years, it's like, here's something really great. And hopefully it does well and we don't have to watch a kind of that Sally Ride blow up the thing. Holy fuck.
Jesus Christ.
Now we've got to explain that to the kids.
But no one's going to be on it at the first flight. I think there's no one's going to be there.
They're just doing filming.
Yeah. So now
the kids are prepped for that type of event, though, because they've been dodging bullets for the last.
That's true, too. Things could be worse. All right. Before we go any further, today's episode is brought to you by YoKratom, YoKratom.com, home of the $60 kilo. If you're into Kratom, YoKratom is the only place to go where you can get a full kilo of Kratom for a mere $60. YoKratom.com has all of your favorite Kratom strains, amazing customer service, and you won't find better prices anywhere. Your podcast, The Rantcast, which was basically derived out of COVID, right? You basically 95 episodes, so it started, right around COVID time.
Yes.
You do allow fans to send in rants, right?
Yeah.
And then you will cherry pick some and read them. My question is there a most common rant that comes in? Like, is there one that is the most common that comes in? Most people have a problem with A, B, or C?
Here's the two major ones everywhere. Potholes, shitty streets.
Okay.
Just fuck and driving.
Driving. Oh, both driving related.
Yeah, both. Massive, and drivers more. It's like, when are these sons of bitches? Every city, there's like, they either don't know how to pass on the left, they don't know how to enter on a super highway, they don't know how to deal with a roundabout. Fucking morons, yada yada. Yellow means you're supposed to wait. I mean, it's the whole litany of the stuff that you know.
Yeah, I saw you do one about somebody who was pissed off about a Ford truck. I don't even know why, but they were really angry. Ford.
Well, they were angry. Here's why, which is why I love reading this stuff. Angry because they had a thing on there, a little light that comes on that said eco, that means you're being ecologically sound. Which is, if you took your foot off the gas, the little light would come on and tell you, "Oh, good boy." And this guy's going, "I need stuff. You know, that'll tell me the oil's going down. I need to know that the engine's overheating. There's four other lights I fucking need, and you give me this piece of shit light that does nothing."
So fair enough.
You know, it's just kind of amazing. And my favorites were when I kind of knew it was working was when I had a pickle debate going on, where the people were screaming at each other about pickles and whether you put a pickle on the plate and you're fucking me with that pickle and it's shooting its jizz on my burger. Wow, guys.
Wow, I'll never look at pickle juice again. Pickle shooting its jizz on a burger. I actually love pickles on a burger. Am I crazy that I love pickles on a burger? I don't know if it makes me nuts.
No, I also, do too. Yeah. I had to yell, that's, and then I yelled in back at the guy that he was full of shit, and then people started yelling at me. It's great. But mostly it's all about, part of the reason I brought it back was that that I started running the Rantcast was, A, somebody has to remain outside of doing a podcast so that people have people to talk to. Mm-hmm. So I'm the guy you get to talk to. And B, that the year before the shutdown, the rants that were being written, because I've been doing this 6 years. After every show, I do an hour, and then I read what was sent in basically from the town or the audience or the state. Mm-hmm. Or from another country if it has to do with something important at this point. And I read those, and it's live streamed throughout the world. And for 6 years I've been doing this thing where it goes, mm-hmm. I got people watching in Pakistan and stuff. It's like bizarre. But it works, and it's getting out there. And so the writing of those rants got to be, over the last year, spectacular. Just spectacular. It was
That's cool.
Well written is the Daily Show, but they—I mean—it's not somebody who could become a writer and do it every night. But it's certainly somebody who, when they found what they were pissed at and used my kind of template to write for, they nailed it. And some of the writings, you just go, "Wow!" So I started to—I wanted to keep it up so that I could. It's the one way I could keep in touch with comedy, like you going out and working the rooftop or whatever it is, just to fucking, no matter what, no reaction or whatever, it's you just to keep your head hooked into it. That was the way it worked to me, because the one thing I can do, I can read a rant. I know where the laughs are in a rant. Mm-hmm. I hear laughter and no one is there.
Right.
Do you see what you're doing as almost also like traveling mental health help, because you're giving these people a safe environment to express their rage, whereas they may not have it during their day-to-day, you know?
I think that it does work in that fashion. I mean, a lot of people go, they'll write, and then they go, I don't really care if you read it, it just felt so good to write it. So,
right.
You know.
Yeah.
Well, they say that all the time. It's very therapeutic to write. I also thought I'm maybe shocked at this, that you consider yourself an optimist, not a pessimist, which I find a little surprising, I guess. Is that wrong to say?
Well, because I think it is surprising, but it has to do with, I don't think I could be this angry unless I believed it could be better.
Yeah.
I mean, a country that has all the money that anybody could ever ask for. It's literally like some fucking fairy tale world this country lives in terms of cash. Not saying people are fucked on every level, but with the amount of kind of what we have available to us, mm-hmm. As a people, and that and how little and that we end up arguing about shit that meanwhile fucking the roof is coming in and we're going, yeah, but what about the fact that I can't get the right colors on my TV? What the fuck are you talking about? We can't even get. Have you tried to get somebody on the phone to deal with anything? We can't employ enough people. You can't employ the one person who might be able to deal with something.
My elevator.
Best Buy is like there. I don't know where they got the people working there now.
My elevator in my building has been broken for 1 month. They cannot find anybody to fix the elevator for 1 month. I have to walk up and down the flights every day. It worked today for about 15 minutes and it went right back down again. It's fucking crazy.
Oh, wow. That's horrifying.
It's fucking crazy.
What a third world setup you got over there.
I really do. It's really upsetting. It really is upsetting.
Well, it's amazing. Yeah.
It is. It is. It's. I think it's also, by the way, all directly related to COVID, because we lost a lot of people, got retired early or left and don't want to come back. Same reason why we don't have enough pilots anymore. It's all related to the same fucking thing, is that I think it's related to COVID. I really do.
And then, but the other thing is that then we've cut off immigration. You know, right. the lifeline of folks coming in who want to work and want to do those things and do what every generation of immigrants have ever done. My families, the Italian families, the Irish, you can name every fucking group.
Right. It is wild. Also, by the way, I love that your original name was not Black. It was Blech, which is hilarious.
Isn't that horrifying?
It's such a horrible, horrible name. Thank God, because my father came from Syria, my grandparents, and it was Setteon, and they changed it to Sutton. Yours was Blech, and they made it Black.
Well, thank God.
Yeah, thank God. Yeah, it's really hilarious.
That's more of a reaction than a name.
Also, it's funny. I saw a clip of you in doing research, and it was from like the early 2000s. And you said in that clip that there's so much news right now, you don't even feel like you can keep up with it. And that was before the chaos of the past 7 years.
Yeah.
Which is just, it's never, I feel like since 2015 or 16, 2015, it just every day is like, I can't even comprehend what's going on anymore. And you felt that way in 2003. So yeah. I can't imagine how you feel now.
Oh, now I just feel I'm just lost. It literally, and a lot of it, what I feel now though is a lot of it in order to is conjecture that we just, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? Who's going to win the election? What's going to happen? How come? Well, you know, and they constantly they need numbers. You know, well, you say his approval ratings at 43%. What the fuck does that mean? I need numbers. They go 43%, which is based on talking to 6,000 people, which means right. if they can really kind of extrapolate from 6,000 people, then maybe we are just rats.
Yeah, not only that, I mean, to me, after the first time when Trump won in 2016 and every poll had him losing tremendously, why anybody would trust any polls at all going forward, it just makes zero sense to me.
Yeah, it does. It's really something. But, you know, they kind of go, they maintain this madness because they keep going, well, you know, it's 40% of the Republican Party believes this. You have to know how many people that is.
Right. It doesn't mean anything. Yeah.
It is meaningless. Yeah. That's like, you know, it has no bearing on the argument because they go 60% of the, when they go 60% of the American people feel X and X about guns or abortion or whatever, and 40% feel the other way. Well, then, you know, that at least you have some sense of, but then there's, you know, is that what is, how much of the 60 is really a 60? How much is the 40? Right.
How much are telling the truth in the poll?
I don't even know it's a debate.
Yeah, it's crazy. And not only, how big is the sample size? How many people are telling the truth in the poll? But they're kind of useless. Quick question. I don't think I've asked you this either, Ken, but it is weird. You go back a couple of decades ago, and it was always the right that was trying to cancel everything. Marilyn Manson is too offensive. You know, everything was like, oh, it's anti-Christian beliefs. And now it's the left that's trying to cancel everything. Even, you know, compatriots like Louis C.K. or Chappelle, who are all trying to be, that are trying to be canceled. It's weird how the 180 happened. Do you remember when you saw that starting to happen? Since you've been doing this for 5 decades?
It seemed to start somewhat, and I'm not just, this is off the top of my head, so I don't want to hear from you. Well, you know, what I'm going to say is I think in part it started with the Me Too, that was the beginning of, and then other things followed. I mean, and it was just these kind of little things I would pick up in a newspaper, or I read The Week. And they have this really great thing at the beginning where they, at the beginning of the magazine, where they go through crazy things that have happened in the, you know, that are real, that you go, and that I've used in my act, because it's like somebody's a comedy writer when they write news now. So you're going, whew, wow. So you kind of pick up that, well, they're not going to get graded because the grading, this is like 2 years ago, we're just not going to give grades out in the classes anymore because it's really it's too traumatizing. What the fuck? Something to that effect. It was right. That little, those little things coming in, but it was it was kind of like the Al Franken getting canceled. That kind of a big.
Yeah. That was a big one. Yeah,
a big one. I was
starting a group for women who were sexually assaulted but also had good grammar. It was called #MeAsWell.
My God.
That's a horrible
That's
joke.
That's the whole reason you brought this up.
I didn't know he was going to bring up me, that, too. I didn't know you'd do that. So also want to ask you one other, a little bit of a delicate topic. You, along with Andrew Dice Clay, George Lopez, a bunch of others, are suing Pandora. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, no, it's about, I got involved with it, and I don't know if I'm supposed to talk about it, but simply, I think I can say that, the suit is about the fact that, the comedians are being paid for performance. They're not being paid for the intellectual rights to their work.
Like an album would be if it was a musical right. album. Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
And as a, you know, and then there are people who can argue, well, you know, what if they steal a joke, yada yada. Well, you know, that's a different type of thing, and it's a completely different world. They're getting, you know, they're making money off of this, and is there any intellectual right to what it is that we do? We wrote mm-hmm. the fucking things. I mean. Or we spoke them, we came up with them, the same way that in some jokes, I think that the jokes are just as important as music. I would rather have been a musician.
Every comic wants to be a rock star. Every rock star wants to be a comic. Yeah, it's exactly. wild to me.
Isn't that funny? It's ridiculous.
Yeah. It amazes me because we've interviewed bunches of both on this show, and it's amazing that parallel. It's wild.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad the comic thing, because then the hours of spending learning a fucking, I had so much trouble with piano, I'd still be trying to get into a band. It'd be sad to watch.
Also, it seems actors want to be more musicians than comics. Very rarely does an actor transition to comedy, right? I'm trying to think. I don't think this ever happened.
Well, Jeremy Piven.
Oh, did he? I didn't. Oh, okay.
Well, speaking of really? Me too. Yeah, he got accused of some things and was like, you know what, I'm gonna hide out in comedy, and now he does stand up. Well,
he's been doing a bang up job of hiding out in comedy, I'll tell you that. I didn't even know what he's doing.
And he tours. He's bumping into me, you know, he's doing clubs.
Oh, okay, that's good.
That's really that whole thing is just it's crazy in terms of the way in which you know this thing that we have to fight for this, that wasn't a part of it at the beginning, and that we didn't get the intellectual rights, and as my tour manager said the other day about it, it put it well, if we were singing our jokes, we'd be paid for
right.
the.
So Tenacious D is covered, but you guys aren't. I get that.
Yeah.
But there are jokes. Their jokes are there. There have been jokes that have been just as important. You know, the seven dirty words of Carlin is as great as any piece of music. You know,
I would argue any album should be, whether it's comedy or singing. If it's your, you wrote it, you performed it, it should go by the same rules as just like a book is covered that way. There's no reason why it shouldn't be. It makes no sense to me.
And the reason I kind of stand that way is part of the reason I became really involved deeply with the National Comedy Center, because it's like one of the things I felt was that in order to solidify the place that we have in terms of the culture, so that it's not just comedy clubs, so that it actually, the comedy club becomes the stepping stone to the next, to what's, to all of that that's out there, and all of, and so... I thought it was really important that we create a place where so that kids wouldn't have to look up shit in Google to try to track stuff, and this does at this point in time is making a really great attempt at doing that, and it's kind of unbelievable. They just put in the Carl Reiner Room, honoring
cool.
everything that he did.
That's awesome.
That's awesome. I know, I'm not, am I right that on The Daily Show, you were with all three hosts of The Daily Show? Did you do it with Craig Kilborn also?
Yeah. Yeah, I did it. I did it from like 2 weeks in. I was on either the first week. No one's been on longer. I mean, not even close. I've been the longest.
Who's
running.
Been your favorite host of the show of the three?
I should have been. The host.
That's a good answer. That's fair.
And that will always stick in my craw. I would say John, in his fashion, and Trevor, after finding his voice in his fashion.
Right. Fair enough.
Because I had different relationships, not so much with John. I had a section of time where I was the guys who were the his producers were real. They were dicks.
And
they actually, unbeknownst to me until I read this kind of oral history of the Daily Show, that they were trying to get rid of me. I should have known because they were, you know, whatever I was trying to put into the Back in Black, they would kind of take it out. So it wasn't so much John. And then I finally went, okay, well, you know, should I quit or do I stay? Because it was just like, I had less and less and less of my voice was in it. And I thought, well, you know, they're going to continue to use me. Fuck it. I'll act. And I learned a lot about acting by doing it. Because I'm reading something that's written for me, but it's not really written in my voice. So I'd have to take something and put it in my voice.
Right. Wow. That's wild. That's funny. I didn't know that. And also, I like that you did that. I don't know when this was, but you did Finding Your Roots and you found out you were related to Marc Maron, which it's kind of funny because I guess I could kind of see it. I don't know. It seems like a logical thing. Two Jewish comics.
Yeah,
I don't
know. Fucking miserable Jews.
Yeah. That stuff. That's pretty on brand. I would assume you guys were related anyway, you know?
Yeah, I know. I said, I was like, I wrote to Mark immediately and said, boy, there's a shocker. Huh? Roy gets what's his name?
John. What's his name? The civil John rights Lewis. Guy. John Lewis. Yeah, that's
he gets
pretty
John
cool.
Lewis. I got Marc Maron. The show ends with look, Lou's got a schmuck and he's got a civil rights icon. I go, this isn't fair, Roy.
Yeah, can I at least get that milk guy or whatever, just something? All right, Mike. Any other last questions for him before we do the first?
I had one kind of question that kind of goes back to the beginning, but I was curious because, you know, you were saying that you were almost unfiltered, filled with rage, screaming at the back wall and then turned back. I was curious, as somebody who was also dormantly filled with rage constantly in my life. I grew up in a repressed Irish Catholic household, all that stuff. Are there still nights where you don't, you know, it's like you got to get up for it. You don't necessarily feel like you have that organic spark, but you have to harness it somewhere deep inside yourself. How do you get there?
Turn on Fox News?
Huh?
I said, turn on Fox News?
Yeah. No, I have it because inevitably, something I said way back about this is I'm yelling about the same stuff that people yell about. You don't really yell about the major things. You yell about, I can't believe I called that fucking to get something done on the for my phone, and I'm fucking on the phone for fucking 2 hours and not getting it done, and that was really what informs that. There's where the rage comes from. It comes from that just getting through a day, and now more than ever. Now it's like, you know, everything is like, becomes that kind of like, just feeds the fire. And so I always know that no matter what, it's going to come out. But it comes out through yelling about the other stuff. And sometimes where I find the problem is eventually at some point I got to say, I've gone too far. Always remember that. It's a key one.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, when you feel the audience fleeing.
My last question on that topic was that in this however many years, you ever go back to a rant of yours and realize you don't agree with yourself anymore, that you changed your opinion on something?
Well, not yet. But the good thing about that is I have no memory.
All right, that's good. All right, so speaking
of that. All
right, we got to do the first now to wrap this up.
The first time ever I saw concert, did drugs, had sex.
The name of the show is the SCR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. We've asked every guest this since the dawn of the show. Your first experience with all three. We start with rock and roll, and we just mean the first concert you went to, ideally on your own volition. If not, just the one that sticks out.
Oh, no, that was the Rolling Stones. Their first tour, which I believe was 64, 65, or 66. I'd have to look that up. But it was their very first tour.
That's a great fucking, that's one, maybe one of the best firsts we've ever had with concerts. That's awesome.
And what was amazing is they only played 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Were they opening or were they the opening?
No, they were the closers, but they were like the Vibrations. And there was a couple more acts, no major acts, and the Rolling Stones.
Wow, that is a great one. That's Buddy Wild. And now, the first drug you ever did after weed, unless weed wasn't your first drug.
First drug I ever did after weed was mescaline.
Wow, that's a good one.
Synthetic of mushrooms. Spectacular. Mm-hmm. The trip ended when I knew it was coming. I kind of felt it had gone on too long. That was the thing. I was going, wow, this is still going. And then I was peeing in the toilet, and the bubbles made the shape of Abraham Lincoln's head on a penny. And that's when I knew I was coming back.
And now the first time you had sex.
Sex. The first time, and I was at where I was giving it a shot freshman year or sophomore year. I was really where I really remember is which, because it was incredible, was this woman and I had kind of gotten together. We both, by total accident, she had been was with somebody else that night, and they gave up on the date, and I was alone, and we got together, and we were both hell-bent on losing our virginity. It never happened. And I kept going, you know, she kept going, I don't think that's the right place. And I go, wow, if that's... I kept saying, I said, how many places are there? And I'm going, if you don't know, this is never going to happen. I'm no genius. I took a sex ed class, but there was nothing really to help me at this point in time.
I mean, at most, maybe there's three or four places if you really want to be creative.
It was good. And then we didn't see each other again. I think we both felt like we got to find somebody else because this ain't going to work.
I've told this on the show, but my first time was just abysmal. And I didn't tell the girl that I was a virgin. And I ran into her 15 years later and told her, by the way, that was my first time. And she went, oh, that explains everything. It's like, oh, Jesus Christ. All right. So you can follow him at Lewis Black on Instagram. Go to lewisblack.com. The Off the Rails tour is still going on, I believe. There's a couple days left, right?
No, it starts actually September. The Off the Rails, I finished May 15th, and so I have a special coming out that we haven't figured out the title of, and we don't know where it'll be, but I know it won't be on Netflix. And then I can tell you that. And so September 15th, I head to Northampton, Massachusetts, and you can go online and see all the places that I'll be coming to.
And by the way, while we're taping this, happy almost birthday.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty. Look at me doing all my research. And you're in some new movie called, I'm going to fuck up this name, Atrabilious. Am I saying that right?
Oh, Atrabilious.
Atrabilious. I never even know. Is that a word? Yeah. Is that a common word? I don't even know what the fuck that means.
It's there. I used to know, and then I forgot it. It's got to do with something. And
I'm sure it has to do with something.
Yeah, and it's directed by the son of... Billy Crudup in Mary Louise Parker.
Oh, cool. Mike Cannon. And did we not play? Did we plug everything you want to plug before we go around the room and do plugs?
For me?
No, for you, sir. For Lewis. Did we leave anything out or you got everything else?
No, that was in the, you know, the Rantcast. You can pick that up on
anywhere you listen to the podcasts or on YouTube.
Anywhere the podcasts, fucking Rantcasts are and podcasts and the, and that, and I have on September 8th, yes, or 9th, September 8th, this is psychotic. I am the chairman of the board of the Kurt Vonnegut Museum and Library.
Wow.
And that's in Indianapolis, Indiana. It's a great place to visit. It's a kind of a remarkable space.
By the way,
if you're a Kurt Vonnegut fan, it's really like going to heaven. And at the West Bank Cafe on September 8th, like at 6:30, if you go to if you go to the Kurt Vonnegut Museum and Library, you go to MySpace, it'll be telling in the next few days.
That's wild.
You know how to come to an event we're having there to raise some money.
And that word that I'm not going to try and pronounce again, atrabulous, whatever it is, apparently means ill-tempered. So pretty perfectly aligned with this entire episode.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Mike Cannon, your plugs, please.
So I'm all over the road. I'll be in through Texas, Florida, all over the place. MikeCannonComedy.com for dates. I just put out a new special. It's all crowd work, and I took edibles before doing the crowd work. So I took 150 milligrams and then went on stage with no plan and did an hour. That's up. It's called Mike Cannon's Huge Mistake on youtube.com/MikeCannonComedy. And that's kind of a companion piece to the hour of material I just released in May called White Privilege Homeless. So check out both of those.
I like
YouTube.
It is that you thought it was an hour, but it was 9 hours because you were on so much edible. Shannon, your plugs?
You can follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts. We have all sorts of interesting guests come on, comedians, musicians, reality TV stars, and porn stars, and they tell their own personal stories about a worst date experience, a time they got into a street fight, and an experience with the paranormal.
Okay, now, Lewis, don't give any indication. We're going to ask around here. Does Lewis Black believe in ghosts? Don't answer till we all chime in. I'm saying absolutely not. Mike?
No.
Shannon?
I feel like I'm just gonna say yes to go against you guys. Okay. Cross my fingers.
Lewis, you believe in ghosts?
Yeah.
Whoa, holy shit, am I wrong? Wow, go Shannon.
Yeah, I know. And it's and you can I did a thing for Discovery, I guess. The they had a thing about ghost stories. I experienced something that kind of
changed
the way I looked at it. So
apparently I didn't do enough research. That's what that tells me. Follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton. My other podcast on health and wellness is called Good Sugar. That comes out every Monday in the top 50 of health right now. We're opening up our first location on 3rd Avenue and 69th Street at the beginning of October. So come down and join us with that there. Lewis Black, thank you so much. We're going to add a song of the week. How do we not add Back in Black by AC/DC? It feels sacrilege if we didn't do that. And we'll see everybody next time on the SDR show. Thank you so much, Lewis. And thank you, Mike, and thank you, Shannon.
Thank you.
Mike, great to be Shannon, here. Ralph. Ralph, a pleasure. Thanks.
News. From the news, else can't be. You've been listening to the SDR Show.